Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Crafts of the Draft Grand Final Special. As usual, I'm one of your co-hosts, Nathan Steppy, joined by my other co-host, Jonty Ralph-Smith. And Jonty, we finally come down to our final four teams for the season after 6 or 7 long months of football. But we're here. How was your weekend of football? We've seen the prelims and we've seen the four teams that will face off in this week's Grand Finals.
My weekend of footy was absolutely great. Obviously started at Shepley Oval on Saturday and then we went out to Queen Elizabeth Oval in Bendigo on Sunday, and I've got a big smile on my face because the four teams I predicted to make the grand finals have made the grand finals. I said it would be Eastern Oakley in pre-season on the girls' side of things. I said it would be Eastern and Sandy on the boys' side of things, and I think throughout the season we have probably seen those sides at their best are the most damaging and are the ones that have the most talent overall. So yeah, it is good to see that they've been the ones that have been able to progress the furthest. We will start with a brief overview of the prelim finals, but we will whiz through that and then we'll get into some extended previews of the two big games this weekend.
For sure. Well, we'll start off at Shepley Oval on the Saturday. Jonty, you saw these two games, and we'll start with Oakley. They got over the line 8-5-53 to Dandenong 5-3-33, in which we thought Dandenong would have a bit of an advantage, obviously being at their home ground. But Oakley got up in the end. But tell me about Jacinta Baxter. She was the one that stood out pretty well, and she's had some pretty good games throughout the season. Maya Stobie, Lucy Cronin, two others to talk about. But give me a bit of a brief overview of the Oakley players.
Yeah, okay, the Oakley players. So, yeah, I think Jacinta Baxter was probably stood up when the game was on the line. She had a couple of really impressive moments, and she's one whose run really offers them a lot, and I think she's one who's really important to the way Oakley play, which we'll get into when we do preview the grand finals a little bit more. Maya Stobie kicked a couple of goals, and we know how important she's been throughout the season with her ability to hit the scoreboard. And, yeah, I think Lucy Cronin's first quarter in particular was really impressive. So to give a little bit of context to the game, there was a big wind throughout the whole day for both the games, both the girls' preliminary finals at Shepley Oval. And it was actually Oakley who had the wind in the first quarter. And they weren't actually able to capitalise, only kicked the two goals, had all the territory really. And then the second quarter, they kicked three goals against the wind. And I think her first half in particular really set it up and ensured that the fact that Oakley didn't initially make use of the wind wasn't in the end going to come back and bite them. And yeah, Dandenong weren't able to punish them the other way.
And then what about Dandenong though? Who were those standouts? And obviously the two rucks had really good elimination finals in Ali Simmons and Zoe Bazanko. Were they able to back it up? I guess you look to the midfield with your Michaela Williamsons and, you know, like Zoe, sorry, mix my words up there. And then Jemiah Breston as well as a bottom major. Tell me a bit about them. How'd they end up playing?
Yeah, I think we knew going into the game, and something we probably discussed last week, that Dandenong were going to have the advantage in the ruck because they did have the recognised rucks that were at the country level, and Oakley, that's probably their one Achilles heel. And it was an area that, yeah, certainly Ali Simons and Zoe Bazanko were able to expose, but I don't think Michaela Williamson and Meg Robertson, who have performed so well all season and nothing to take away from them, but they probably on the day just weren't able to capitalise on that golfing class that they showed in the ruck. Having said that, yeah, on Bazanko and Simons, wasn't just what they were doing with their ruck craft. They also combined for all three of Dandenong's first half goals. So they really kept their team in it. And then, yeah, you mentioned Jemiah Breslin. It was her run, and she was been one that's been really impressive, probably overshadowed by those two, and also Gemma Reynolds, who's Vic Country listed, but I expect she'll be sort of around that mark for Vic Country as well next year. She's been one probably flying under the radar a little bit, but I have liked her into the season in particular.
For sure. Well, disappointing for Dandenong in the end, because obviously last year they lost the grand final. This year got it close again, but they've got a promising list. It's not like that'll be the end for them for a while. No. They'll be back next year for sure. So on to the second game, which was probably a game we kind of expected to happen in our predictions last week. Eastern were too strong for Geelong, 12-11-83 to Geelong 3-5-23. And yeah, Eastern too strong. Jonty, who were their top players? And it was an Eastern leader, especially. I know you were talking about that, stood up and took her team to the grand final.
Yeah, people who tuned into our live stream last night would have heard that I was full of praise for Ava Campbell. And go and listen back to that. We have uploaded it on our Instagram if you haven't listened to it. So we got Ava Campbell, Josh Tovey and Will Brown on to preview the grand finals from their perspectives. But, yeah, Ava Campbell was one who took a litany of intercept marks throughout the day. And she, led her side really well. And I think she would have gained a lot of confidence from that game. But, yeah, it was an Eastern domination. They had the wind in the first quarter, were able to take full toll, had a 33-point lead at quarter time, kept Geelong scoreless up until that point, and Geelong weren't able to ever really even it up at all. There was a little bit of resistance maybe in the second half, and Eastern weren't able to fully run away with it when it did look like that lead could get quite ugly. But yeah, it was overall a team performance. You could look at all the top end players really performed well. I was really impressed with the way Hayley McLaughlin played. I thought Grace Ballany had her moments. She hit the scoreboard a couple of times. Alicia Pisano kicked two goals up forward. It probably felt more like a 4 or 5 goal performance. She was dangerous every time the ball went into her territory. And Laura Stone continues to go from strength to strength as well.
And then Chloe Adams is probably the one Geelong Falcon just quickly to touch on, because this was obviously her last game at under 18 level. And
yeah.
She's boosted her stocks pretty well, and I'm assuming she did the same again on the weekend.
Yeah, I think she did. Yeah, I think she was probably the one Geelong Falcon that really stood out. Obviously, Sarah Howley always gets a lot of the footy, but Sarah Howley missed a couple of weeks ago with that under-17s game, and I think that allowed Chloe Adams to step out of her shadow, and I think she's finished the season on a really positive note. So I think she's been really positive. But we'll get to the boys' preliminary final reviews, and we both saw these games. The first game was Tassie versus Eastern. Tassie going down 11-268 to Eastern 16-12-108. So Tassie's accurate kicking, probably keeping them in it for a large part of this game. Having said that, it did feel in general play probably in the first half that it was quite even. Tassie just weren't able to get on the scoreboard. When they did, they were accurate. But Eastern did have the 14-point halftime advantage, and there were a lot of players that stood up and boosted their stocks. I think it's a win that Eastern will take a lot of confidence out of.
Well, 100%. And they sort of, Josh Tovey, who's the first player we need to bring up, but he sort of said this 2 nights ago, if you listen to this on the Wednesday on our live stream, he said they've had the underdog mentality, which we both found a bit odd because they've probably been on paper the stronger side in most of their games. I guess if you go off regular season, they lost to a few of those teams. But let's start on Josh Tovey. He was terrific. One that has shown glimpses of how good he can be during the season. Took a few good intercept marks and was just strong. He held his ground extremely well. And I think he lost that first one-on-one contest against McKercher, who kicked the first goal sort of out the back. And then afterwards, like you said, he didn't lose another contest.
No, he didn't. And if you go and look at the Coast League statistics, you'll see that he had 12 disposals and 5 marks, which doesn't do justice to how well he actually played as a defender. If there were advanced stats available, you would see that, you talk about Isaac Quain. There's lots of talk in the AFL. He's only lost 3 one-on-one contests throughout the whole year. He had a little bit of that about him, had that real swagger, that confidence, that ability to just fly. And if he wasn't taking marks, he was certainly getting hands on the ball and wasn't getting out marks. So I thought it was a really impressive performance from the back. And yeah, he started really well in the first quarter. You obviously talk about that loss that he had, but the next 20 minutes of his first quarter, he would have had 7 or 8 one-on-one wins, which would have given him a lot of confidence for the rest of the day. And I also thought some others in defence that stood up when they needed to. I thought Riley White was really good. And I also thought that Cooper Trembar in that third quarter in particular really came into the game. We know how good he's been throughout the season, and actually performed really well in round one against Sandy with all the intercept marks he was taking. But yeah, he's one who the last few weeks has found some form and was again a key ingredient in that defence.
Yeah, well, he had 3 big defensive moments like in a row. I think it was in the third quarter where just like, one after the other after the other. And I'll move to the opposite end of the ground for Eastern. I'll start with the one that's not on our run sheet, but Liam George, I thought, did some very nice things and was really unselfish, got himself on the scoreboard in the end. And yeah, he was one that was, I thought, deserved a good mention the way he played. But we look to their main three, Weatherall, who kicked 4 goals, and then Cantwell and Tanzimat with 3 each. And last week I said Tanzimat's the most reliable player in the talent league. 3 goals from 5 touches in the end, unless the stats were updated. But yeah, they're a real tricky unit to beat.
Yeah, and the other player was probably Christian Moraes in the midfield. Yeah. He continues to go from strength to strength this season. Just to touch on some Tassie players quickly who boosted their stocks before we do move on to the Sandy and Geelong game. I thought that Ari Schoenmaker was really, really good again off halfback. He's got a lot of height for someone who plays the role that he does. And James Leake as well. They kicked the first 2 goals of the game for the Devils. and they were bloody good goals.
there were goals that I think we said like 9 out of 10 times no one's kicking either of those goals, and they managed them, and you know, they were and Schoenmaker, that kick.
That left foot from 60. It was a left foot from 60. It's amazing how much distance he gets in it. Jack Callanan kicked 3 goals. I think his last couple of games really proved that he still has that sort of high upside that we sort of expected from him. And Oli DePaoli, Q-Bank, after his breakout performance last season, I thought backed up pretty well with 20 disposals. We'll move on to the Sandy game. They pretty comfortably accounted for Geelong by 34 points. They probably didn't actually feel like they had certainly won the game until the last 15 minutes, but Geelong never really threatened them. I think if there was one thing Sandy looked back on, maybe their midfield didn't necessarily capitalise on the star power that they had. Yes, I know you look at the statistics and you'll see Charlie Edwards got 24 disposals. Riley Sanders got a lot of the pill as well. And obviously Levi Ashcroft, 24 and 3 goals. But I did think there were a few times where Geelong were able to swing the momentum just briefly. And that was probably built off the fact that they were able to exit out the front of stoppage. So maybe if there was one little area Sandy would have liked to be better, it was there. But yeah, it was a pretty convincing win in the end.
Yeah, it was. It was pretty much a similar result to the last game and almost identical in terms of how it played out. Just close for 3 quarters and then wind in the last quarter for the winning team in the end. And that's really Sandy just capitalised much better in the end. But let's start on a few of the backline players for Sandy who don't get as much mention as they probably should realistically, the way they play and hold the team together. Nate Sullivan, Ethan Williams and Lockie Voss, who just held their ground very well. And Nate Sullivan is one that will be on a series that talks about the unsung heroes later.
Yep.
You know, in a couple months' time, we're going to put that out. He was terrific. Just one that was so reliable, took a few good handy marks down in. And I think there was a goal saving. Oh, it was either just a possession, goal saving type of possession in one of the quarters where he just stood up.
I don't know if we're talking about the same moment, but there was a moment where he was running back with his opponent towards the goal face, and for his opponent, for all money, looked like he had him for speed and just closed him down and was able to actually win that going back towards goal. Yeah. So that was really impressive. And Ethan Williams, you mentioned him being in the back line. I actually thought his impact was more so when he was on the wing for most of the game. So I thought he was really good. And Lockie Voss was impressive as well. Then Ollie Murphy, if you're going to look at the back line as well, stood up, took some really big marks. And Matt Carroll slotted back in there and he'll be better for the run. So will Charlie Harrop, first back match from injury for both of them. And they'll certainly play a key part in the grand final. Just to quickly touch on some Geelong players who boosted their stocks, I thought that Pat Hughes in the midfield was their best on ground. Clearly, I thought when they were playing well, he was one who was really impressive against a midfield that obviously had a better reputation than Geelong's on paper. Angus Hastie had some moments of drive off halfback and linked up with Joe Pike, or not directly. There was a couple of possessions in between. Mm-hmm. But tell us about that goal, because I know it's one you were a big fan of. Probably one of the goals of the season in the Talent League.
Could have been goal of the year in the end. I put it on my Twitter if you want to go check that out, or go to our Craft of the Draft page. It's retweeted on that. Hasty started. It was 25 metres out from Sandy's goal when this play started. Ran it to about just past the centre square. Kicked it in deep. Pike struggled to sort of... He missed the mark, kept going, kept it in on the boundary line. I can't remember which Falcon was there to help give it back to him. He sort of spun out of bounds but got on the boot and went through, and it was quite a good goal. But Pike has been terrific. He did what he was expected to do, and I think he did, again, win that ruck contest with that. And Vicentini won it on hit-outs, but I think in terms of impact around the ground, Pike's really improved, because I think his impact was really only seen in the ruck contests, I'd say, pre-championship, whereas now that attention has shifted to the impact he makes going forward. And he gets a few inside 50s per game now, which is something he's added to his game. So he was terrific, and I think he's one that's definitely boosted his stocks.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd be reluctant to say he won the ruck battle, but I think it was even. Like, on paper, you'd see 25 hit-outs, 20 disposals to Vigo Vicentini, and 20 hit-outs and 10 disposals to Joe Pike, which doesn't do justice to how even it was. So I don't know if there's a clear winner. Yeah, I can understand why I think Pike won it. I can understand why people think Vigo Vicentini won it, but it wasn't. You look at it on paper, it wasn't that blowout. But we will move to the grand final previews now. We'll start with the girls. So Eastern and Oakley, who both of us you know, touted in preseason as being the teams to watch. And probably everyone, even though Dandenong did rise towards the end of the season and really close the gap, and you do feel for them not making the grand final, these two have probably been the pace setters of the competition all season. So I think it's going to be a really good battle. Easton probably bat a little bit deeper than Oakley, but Oakley are very, very well structured and very well coached by Tyrone Vickery, I think, which is going to make it a very intriguing watch at 9:45 a.m. at Icon Park on Saturday.
Very interesting, because we've said multiple times these are two teams that have never played each other at full strength, which is just ridiculous to think. And they've played each other twice at the very least. So yeah, they've got some games up their sleeve, and it's 1-1 in those battles. And both games, both teams are pretty decimated. Easton less so in the second game. It was just the under-17s. Obviously, Oakley, we impacted a lot more. I guess, but let's start with Oakley in terms of what advantages they have in this. Because, like you said, in terms of the game plan and the structure they have, it holds up against every team. And they've proven they can beat any team in any way. They can adapt on the fly. They're a team that can have goals kicked against them, but then turn it around and make it a contest again. So a lot of avenues to look at. And I'll start with the forward line setup. You look tall, you look Emma McDonald, but she hasn't had as much impact probably towards the back end of the season as she had the front end, but Oakley is still finding a way to win games. So I'll move to my most important player for Oakley, and you'll touch on yours soon as well. But mine's Maya Stovey in this forward line, I think, because I think Oakley need quite a few avenues to goal in this. I don't think you just win this through one player, and they don't always do that. They've proven they can do without. But Maya Stovey's one who had a really strong start to the season, probably dipped off a little bit, but I think...
Good last week.
Yeah, good. Well, yes, good last week. So one that I think needs to have just a... It doesn't have to just be on her, but in terms of a small forward that could just pop up. And we know how good Alicia Pisano is on the other end in that small forward role. They can be such a dangerous asset. I think if she can get on the end of a few, it takes the pressure off a few other Oakley forwards, and it gives them just a easier avenue to go, because Easton and Dandenong, they both have the strongest defense in the defenses in the league. So, you know, it's not going to be as easy for Oakley. So that, yeah. That's the forward line for them. And yeah, Maya Stovey fits into my most important player in that.
Yeah, it's interesting that you give Easton the little nudge in defence, or I guess the little advantage. I think Oakley's defence has been really good as well. And you are, I guess, grasping at straws with these two teams, because they've been so strong in every line. But if you look at Oakley, and you mentioned they can have goals kicked against them, and then they're able to turn it around. I think they've shown that in the fact that they never concede, or they've only, until last weekend, they'd only conceded more than 24 points in a game three times throughout the home and away season. And also that encompasses the quarterfinal win they had as well. So I think that shows that, they have had a couple of times where they've had a couple put on against them. I think back to that game against Dandenong in April, where they had two goals put on against them in the first quarter, and they looked in real trouble, and then their defence was able to really hold up. So I think their defence is really strong as well. So it's going to be really interesting to see whose defence is going to hold up, who's going to be able to penetrate with their forwards. Like you say, Easton have got some, or rather Oakley have got some strong forwards. Easton, obviously, with Alicia Pisano, Grace Ballany's in some really good form as well. I really liked her game on the weekend. And Georgie Brisbane can hit the scoreboard as well. Georgia Knight kicked a really impressive goal, and that will give her a lot of confidence. I think she's won in the last few weeks, who has really found some form as well. My watch for Oakley is Gemma Rigoni, and I think she's their most important player, based on the fact that I think where Oakley need to win it, when you talk about winning it in the midfield, they need to get it out wide and use their run, because I think if you look at it from a midfield versus midfield point of view, it's very close, but I would actually give Easton the edge. But if they're able to get it out to their wingers, Gemma Rigoni, Amy Harris-Brett, these sort of players are going to beat Easton on paper. So hopefully, for their point of view, that they can translate that onto the field. Gemma Rigoni last weekend took three bounces up the broadcast side wing and sent it inside 50. It really turned the momentum of that quarter when she did that, and was able to give her team a little bit of territory against the wind. And I think that's the sort of thing she does every game. So her ability to take bounces, only had 11 disposals, so it was a typical Gemma Rigoni game. But if she can get 17 or 18 disposals, it will really hurt them. So I think that from an Oakley point of view, she's one who holds a lot of weight, as do all of their outside players.
For sure. I'll move to the eastern side of it, and we'll compare a few more matchups. And I'll start with my most important player for Eastern, and which I think is Hayley McLaughlin in this one, because she's probably the best winner in this Vic, at least in the Vic draft pool for sure. Just the way she plays. I'm very interested to see how she'll go, because I think she holds a lot of importance, especially against your two Oakley winners in Pousty and Kara Spreader. And I think she probably does win that battle against both of them. She's got that run and carry that, and a great kick as well, that I just think puts it all together in one. And I think in transition, that's probably where this game is won. Who can defend the transition the best? Because Eastern, like we've seen in a couple of weeks in a row, that's how they score their goals. It's about five in a row, all in the same type of manner. It's just absorb the pressure and then go, because they know they're able to run and get that carry and move it really quickly. And I think she's one that, Hayley McLaughlin is that one that can get it, move it really quickly.
That's definitely where I think that's where Eastern have the advantage. We talk about in transition, their ability to link up with handballs. They're really clean. So I think saw it as well on the weekend, where Geelong a few times did have some entry kicks and would get it inside 50 to ground level, or would get it to the top of 50 and just a little touch that wasn't quite clean. And then Eastern are able to pounce because they're so clean fundamentally, and then they're able to go. And they really do back themselves. I did say, obviously, Oakley have the advantage on paper. And how good would it be to see Gemma Rigoni play on Hayley McLaughlin in a wing? I do rate Hayley McLaughlin as the best winger in the state and probably in the draft pool. But I guess when I talk about Oakley having the advantage on the wingers, I'm probably more talking about their other wingers that Eastern have that don't necessarily have the class of Hayley McLaughlin. And Hayley McLaughlin's tank as well will really stand out. She's one who towards the back end of the game could really come to the fore, because she's one who'll continue to run and run and run. But so will Amy Karras-Brett. And she's one who I've written down a couple of players who'll be wanting a big game just from an AFLW draft point of view. And I think she's one who will be wanting a big game. She's one who can run as well. And she's probably, been a little bit concealed, where there's been a lot of hype around Hayley McLaughlin, where Amy Karras-Brett's had a really good season as well, but is probably a little bit under the radar and is a little bit on the fringe. A really strong game would really boost her stocks. And Lucy Cronin, obviously, Mr. Vic Metro, didn't get the opportunity representative level, had a really strong game on the weekend. If she could back it up again and finish the season with two really strong games after already being considered one of the best players to Mr. Vic Metro, I think she's putting herself in a really strong position to get to the highest level that she's capable of getting to. From your point of view, Nathan, were there any others that you think are needing a big game?
Yeah, I've got two Eastern players. Ava Campbell's one who had a terrific performance last week, and I think to back it up again, the question with her that I've had throughout the year is just the kicking in general. Her disposal down back is pretty good in terms of reading the ball really well, taking a good intercept mark, but it's that movement going forward, her kicking can let her down sometimes. But, you know, last week she proved she can hold up really well, and I think on a big stage this, I just think it will do her the world of good, because she's got the talent and she's got the potential, and it's probably just executing two or three really good games, especially in a final series as well, against the best teams in the comp. She's one that I just think will benefit from having a really big game here, and she's just crucial to the way Eastern play in general as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's well summed up. I'll just also just touch on a couple of other things. I think the ruck advantage that Eastern have, we talked about the fact Dandenong had it last week, so... Yeah, Oakley don't have the class in the ruck. That is their Achilles heel. There's no denying that. So Jess Vukic, the Vic Metro ruck, will hope to put it on a platter for the Eastern midfielders. And I think that's going to be really instrumental as well. I think that's where Eastern will have the advantage. I was talking about the midfield advantage that Eastern would have before. She's a big part of that. And just on Oakley, a watch will be on Sienna Talaridi. She, you talk about moments, you talk about finals, putting your body on the line and needing to do the thing for the team. And she did exactly that. It was a bloody courageous act that she did in the second quarter. She ended up having to come off. The game was stopped for a couple of minutes, and they're hoping it was just bruised ribs. But whether it was bruised ribs or cracked ribs will probably dictate her availability for this weekend. So we do hope that she's available. We want the best players out there. But yeah, it's certainly one to keep an eye on. But without any further ado, we'll get to our tips. Nathan, I'll start with you. Who do you see winning this one?
Well, I'm sticking with Oakley, because they're who I tipped for the premiership. But when we did our finals predictions, I just think it will be a matter of just them just wanting it more. Because I do think Easton have the depth in this, but I don't think that is something that phases Oakley. I guess with Oakley, that with all those bottom ages, you know, does that make a difference? You've got girls that have technically played a lot less talent league football. Not that I think it counts for much when you get, if you're making it all this way, you're good enough to be there. I think this will be under two goals, but I don't think it will come down to the final quarter in a sense. I think one team will just sort of break away after a point and it will be close, but never really, you know, holding your breath. But I think Oakley do it by 9 points in it.
And I'll say Eastern by 18 points. I just think the class golf, which you touched on, will just be too much to overcome. I think in girls footy in particular, that depth probably holds more weight than it does in boys footy. So for that reason, I'll go Eastern by 3 goals. So and I'll give a best on ground as well, I reckon, Alicia Pisano to cap off a very good talent league season.
Well, my best on ground. Put me on the spot there.
I've put you on the spot.
I got a game in McDonald. Love watching her game.
She certainly had a good first quarter against Dandenong last week. We'll move on to our boys.
Just want to say the game is 9:45 on the Saturday morning. I don't think we actually ever said that. 9:45 Icon Park Saturday morning.
Yeah, and the boys' grand final is the Sunday morning at Icon Park at 11:15, Sandringham Dragons versus the Eastern Rangers. And there's a lot of talking points in this one. I think Sandringham have the clear depth ascendancy on paper, but Eastern have a lot of players who are willing to play their role. They have a lot more bottom ages, and they have a lot less passenger. Sandy don't have passengers, but I can see a lot of these Eastern players going on and playing state league footy, even if you do only have Nick Watson and Caleb Windsor as your draft locks. So it will be really interesting, because having said that, like we've already touched on, Sandy do have Ethan Williams, Lockie Voss and Nate Sullivan, who didn't make Vic Metro, probably are more suited to that state league footy as being next year. Yet they've been the ones that have performed despite the class that they do have. So it'll be interesting to see. So can Sandy capitalise on that dominance they probably do have on paper in the midfield is probably the first thing I'd like to touch on. They've obviously got Riley Sanders. They've got Charlie Edwards. They've got Harvey Johnston who goes through there for spurts as well. They've got a lot of star power in there. And obviously Levi Ashcroft, who was really good last weekend. But I think their most important player is Cooper Lord. And the reason I say that is because I don't think there's a substitute for him. I think in every other area of the ground, Sandy, you've got two of a player. So if a key defender doesn't perform, you can put Lockie Voss on instead of Ollie Murphy. If a key fourth, Archer May, is not performing, he's a big loss. But, you know, Kelsey Deer might stand up. Same with the wingers. But I just don't think there's any other Sandy player who has those defensive attributes in the midfield that's going to be able to allow that star power to thrive. So I think he plays a really important role to ensure that star power is able to expose the golfing class in the guts.
Yeah, well, interested. And then you look at the Eastern side of it and you've got Moraes and Tyson Shrook, who runs through it quite a bit. That I think I like the sort of matchup of Moraes and Ashcroft in that midfield. That's one I'm quite excited to watch. And the question tactically in this that I've sort of put down here that I think is worth talking about is Eastern are a team who, when they win the centre clearances, they like to go wide. They typically just like to push it wide a little bit and move forward that way, spread the ground, whereas Sandy, they can do it in the mid through the guts. They'll just sort of get that handball over the back, like over the top, and move forward that way. And my question to you is, does this affect one team or the other? Because I feel like the way Sandy win this is with a bit of a chaos forward line, because they are, and that's something we'll talk on, they are quite tall. I think you've got to make a little bit of chaos in there to cause Easton some issues, because in the form that Tovey, Trembarth are in at the moment, they're winning their one-on-one battles when it goes long into the forward 50. So is this affecting one team or the other?
It's hard, that battle where you talk about Sandy's forwards and Eastern's defenders, because you talk about making it chaos, but I typically think if you're going to make it chaos, you need some small forwards to be able to capitalise on that at ground level if it's going to come to ground level. But like you say, a lot of those guys aren't losing one-on-ones. I don't see any of Sandy's forwards getting off the chain. Firstly, because I don't see any of those Eastern defenders playing a bad game. But secondly, if Braden LaPlanche or Josh Tovey or Riley White did have an off day, or Remy McLean, then you just put another one on them and you can be sure that they're going to shut them down. So I don't know. It's really tough for Sandy to score goals and to rely on a big bag from one of those players. I guess what they do have is Archer May in there, and he's one who's got a lot of size. So Eastern have a lot of those key defenders, but can any of them actually match from a physicality point of view, Archer May, I'm not sure. So it will be interesting. And the other thing from a midfield to forward point of view that you touch on from Sandy is 7 of their 15 goals on the weekend were kicked from midfielders. So they do get a lot of scoreboard impact from those midfielders. Riley Sanders, you can generally bank on 1 or 2 each week. Levi Ashcroft knows how to find scoring opportunities and also convert them. I think his finishing polish is really good and a big part of his game. Murphy Reid, I know, plays forward, but also goes into the midfield and can score goals when he is playing as a midfielder. Harvey Johnston plays off half forward, but even when he's in the midfield, he can score goals as a midfielder. So I think all their midfielders really contribute on the scoreboard, maybe except Cooper Lord, who's obviously, like we say, plays a little bit of a different role in there. So that's a key part as well, how does Sandy put a winning score on the board when they don't necessarily have that ground level forward per se, and Eastern's defence is rock solid.
Yeah, well, for sure. I think you do have to rely on the likes of Murphy Reid. I think Harvey Johnston plays a big role in scoring as a smaller forward when he is up in that forward rotation. So I'm excited to see how they go and how they manage that. But let's switch to the other side and Eastern forwards. How do they generate their scores? I feel like it's a lot more clear cut with Eastern because they've got it sorted out. And the one that I think, as I always love talking about, and I just talked about him before, Isaac Tanzimat, who's my most important player.
Mm-hmm.
He genuinely does win this team a game and a grand final on this matter, because not that no one expects him to kick the goals like he does, but he's not that target like Weatherall is, like now a Liam George is going for, a small forward that just gets into really nifty positions. I think he's one that can just win you a game off some, and he kicks his goals as well. He's accurate, 3 goals straight last week as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, Weatherall, Liam George, you add Nick Watson, who I think is not really had much of an impact, and that's a good thing, not a bad thing, as in he's had bad impact, just that he hasn't got his hands on the footy as much. And Eastern are still kicking very good winning scores in the end. I think 84 against Oakley, 108 against Tassie. Like, they're kicking scores to win your games by the 15-minute mark of the fourth quarter. So I'll let you talk about the Sandy matchups. Who would you put to which player?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting what you talk about with Isaac Tanzimat, because that's exactly right, because Nick Watson's going to take that small forward that small defender away from Isaac Tanzimat. Yeah. So whether it's Billy McGee that they back in, he obviously had the role on Tom Anastasopoulos last week, thought he won that battle. Yes, Tom Anastasopoulos had a couple of early goals, but after that, I thought Billy McGee. Gallen Birdie rebounded really well and had a really good rest of the game. So if he's their best small defender from a defensive point of view and he's on Nick Watson, then that puts Isaac Tanzimat, given their second best small defender, and that's no disrespect to whether it's Nate Sullivan or someone else, Matt Carroll, who's obviously a big metro as well, but it does free him up a little bit, and perhaps he gets the third small defender because there is Liam George, who's obviously played some really good school footy, and I think there's a lot of people that are a big fan of what he's capable of producing. He's a real clever, got a lot of forward craft about him as well, and I think if Isaac Tanzimat doesn't hurt you, then certainly Liam George will. But yeah, from a matchup point of view, Matt Carroll will be a lot better for the run. I thought he had a couple of really good moments, but I think he's one who is a real watch for Sandy. They've been able to get to this point without heaps of impact from him, but he's one who has shown he can shut down a small forward really effectively. Jack Deline kept him really quiet against South Australia. So he'll get a matchup, whether that's against Nick Watson or someone else, and it's hard to see them having much impact with the sort of game that Matt Carroll, we know he can play. And Nate Sullivan, he just does what the coach expects him to do. His sole focus is shutting down his opponent, which is what you want a defender to do. He isn't focused on his stats. He had 6 disposals on the weekend, and I still think he was in the top 3 or 4 most influential players for Sandy on the ground. So it's interesting, and there is a lot of matchups and a lot for Sandy to consider there. So I think the most important player, though, for Eastern is Riley Weatherall. And the reason I say that is because I think their turnaround in form, particularly the last 7 or 8 weeks, where they've virtually gone undefeated, it has been built off his ability to be that real aggressive barometer inside 50, his ability to take those marks, bring it to ground. And he's never lost a matchup, I don't think, since Eastern have turned that form around. So he's always taking marks and bringing it to ground level. And they are now at a point, probably like what you say with Tanzimat, where they're expecting 2 or 3 goals from him. But the difference from Tanzimat for me is, if Tanzimat does have a quieter day, Liam George might kick 3 or 4 or Nick Watson might kick 3 or 4. Whereas Riley Weatherill, if he's having an off day, there is no other real key target up there with Brayden LaPlanche now going back. So I think he plays a real key role for them, and he'll probably get the matchup with Ollie Murphy. Having said that, Lockie Voss has had some tasks on Nate Caddy in the last couple of weeks and Michael Rudd. So perhaps that's the matchup they'll go with. But yeah, whoever he does get, I'm interested to see the impact he can have on this contest.
Yeah, well, he's been super effective, and I'm just looking now. Easton have been very accurate. That's something, and this is a great comparison here in terms of Sandy, who they could genuinely have kicked themselves out of some games recently. I know they've been on top, but they do tend to be a bit inaccurate. But Easton, since the community break ended, 14-9, 8-4, 19-6, 11-18 against Oakley, which is at a windy Highgate, where Oakley as well kicked 10-17, 16-12. They're above 50% in, you know, since that last postseason break. So, I think the way Sandy do limit their effect in inside forward 50, you need to push them up the ground a bit further. The deeper that gets, they're going to kick goals. That's what they've proven. They are accurate the closer you get to goal, which is just a general statement. But I feel like for Easton, it's very much applied in this case, where they convert. They convert very well. And I want to move to a bit of a Sandy talking point here. We go back 12 months, and this is a team that just won their first premiership in a couple of years. And there's 5 players that were in this premiership team. And we've got Will Brown, Levi Ashcroft, Riley Sanders, Vigo Vicentini, and Archie Roberts. Does this hold any advantage? Because this, I feel like this is, I mean, it's not rare. It probably happened when Sandy made the grand final in, you know, 16-17 back-to-back, but it doesn't happen too often where you get players playing back-to-back grand finals. So is this going to hold any advantage?
Nah, not in my opinion, it's not. Just because all of those players that have had the grand final experience have also played Vic Metro, as has Nick Watson, as has Riley Weatherill, as has Brayden LaPlanche. All of these boys have played high-level footy where there's been pressure and expectation on themselves as well. Yeah. And probably those championships matches, they do feel a little bit more pressure in that they're the matches that the recruiters hold the most weight on. And it's obviously an individual development competition. And, you know, they're all looking to get drafted at the end of the day. That's the whole point of the competition. So I don't necessarily think that this experience holds as much weight as it would in your typical local grand final, VFL grand final, AFL grand final, etc. But I mean, Will Brown, I mean, it's a good segue because he's obviously one that, like you said, has had that experience and has performed on the big stage. And he's one who I think is someone I'm really keen to watch, because after that first half that he had in the grand final last year, I think a lot of people really took notice of him as that marking half forward, then obviously went, played as that big-bodied mid, and now he's playing as a half forward again. And him, Luke Lloyd, Charlie Harrop and Kel Shadir are 4 players that I'm really interested in how they play, and I'd love to see 1 or 2 of them have a really big end to the season, because Sandy are in a bit of a unique situation in that they're all draft prospects along with Archer May as well, but it's very difficult because most of them would be used to playing as that real key barometer, almost inside 50, maybe not so much Will Brown, but the others certainly, because of their height and because of the sorts of players they are. Yet because Sandy have so many targets up there, they're not always the first, I guess, they're not the player that catches the midfielder's eye as much. So some of those players have had quieter couple of games. Luke Lloyd's one. Kel Shadir's one who I'd love to see kick 4 or 5 and just capitalise on some of the marks he takes, because sometimes he can be a little bit inaccurate. He's probably a culprit. You say Sandy can be inaccurate, he's a culprit of that. Luke Lloyd obviously got injured last week. Expect he'll come straight back in. There's no worries about that. It was just a little bit of soreness there. And yeah, Charlie Harrop will be better for the run last week. And if he can finish the season on a positive note, then test reasonably well at the combine, he'll be pretty well set up. So from a Sandy point of view, there's some players I'd love to see go big. And from your point of view, was there anyone else from Sandy?
Yeah, from Sandy, 2 that I've kept my eye on all season, and Tarkin O'Leary, Harvey Johnson. I just think those are 2 that probably have quite a big role in this grand final in terms of their height in general. They're 2 of the smaller players, not Harvey, as much Tarkin. And you know how good Tarkin can be on the outside with that kick that can just change the field completely in a matter of seconds. So I'm really interested to see how both go. And like I said before with Harvey, I feel like he could have quite a big forward impact in this game. Just his ability to get in and under, he's quite, you know, how agile he is on the ground. So he's one I think could just go sort of under the radar in this game, just fly under the radar and have a really big performance. And Tarkin, I just think his role is pivotal because he's such a good ball user and can change the game for you. So love to see those two perform really well. But Eastern side?
Yeah, just to finish on that, I think they're both really good shouts because they've both made Vic Metro. They both had some really good moments for Vic Metro, particularly Harvey Johnston having that one really good game, but probably haven't necessarily played their best footy over the last month for whatever reason. Harvey Johnston did have 7 clearances on the weekend, though, so that sort of shows his ability to step through traffic. But from an Eastern point of view, a couple of others who are sort of on that fringe of getting drafted, they've both got state combine invites and have received interest and have been talking points all season. Cooper Trembley Bath and Ry Cantwell. Cooper Trembath is that intercepting defender. He's performed well, I think, for the last couple of weeks. He's been pretty good all season, had that really big performance in round one, probably just dropped off a little bit and was playing through a little bit of pain in a couple of those games, and that caused him to just miss Metro selection, which probably really hurt his chances because that round one game showed how good he can be, and I think he would have performed fine at Vic Metro level, but unfortunately just didn't get that opportunity. And yeah, if he can finish with one more big game, I think that would just really propel his draft chances even further than they already sit. And Ry Cantwell, as a powerful sort of marking half forward, he's had some really good moments, and he's also played on the wing a little bit, and I think that shows he's got that real running capacity. He's obviously really good overhead, as we know, and he seizes his moments late in games as well. We saw that on the weekend, and we saw it against Oakley as well. So he's one who's really able to stand up to the occasion, so he could have an impact on the result. But yeah, certainly as well, after having that broken wrist at the start of the season, he's one who'll be just wanting to make sure he's done everything he can to put himself in draft contention.
100% for sure. And then I'll list off two Eastern players. Josh Tovey's the first one. Actually, both of these players, Riley Weatherill and Josh Tovey, not so much just that they need a big game, but I think especially Riley Weatherill, if he can cap off what's been a really, really good end to the season, obviously not getting a lot of Metro time, I just think this game is one that could boost your stocks quite a lot in his case, just to cap it off with a 3 or 4 goal performance. And Josh Tovey, I think to bring in that form, and if he's able to do what he did on the weekend again and shut down Sandy's tall forwards, who can have a lot of firepower like Archer May, I think it does his chances just boost him a little bit and puts his name on the map, because I think we said last week, there's just players sometimes you don't expect to be in talk, like we had Toby McMillan last year, who just sort of came out of nowhere really with his going to GWS. So you never know what a good performance can do for you. And with all that being said, who is your tip?
Yeah, my tip is the Eastern Rangers. I said that at the start of the season. I've maintained that all the way through the season, and I've got no reason to change now. I just think they've got a lot of those players who have got a lot of faith in the bottom ages. The bottom ages are really standing up, and they've got a lot of faith in those players like your Tyson Shrucks and your Remy McLeans, who are very likely to go on to state league lists and perform. And Sandy have a lot of talent, but how that talent all sort of comes together from a chemistry point of view, and if they're able to play as a team, I'm just not sure I've had that question answered having watched them in the last couple of weeks. Whereas with Eastern, I just feel like every time I watch them, I've got full confidence that they're going to deliver as best as they can, and they're going to get the most out of themselves. And I think if that's the case again on Saturday, if that Eastern are going to win.
I'm leaning towards Sandy in this. I just think experience just plays a little bit of a part, because these players will do, the five we touched on, they know the occasion a little bit. And I just think Sandy, all they need to do is execute inside forward 50 and be efficient on the scoreboard. Because they've had above 25 scoring shots in their last three games. They hit the scoreboard. It's whether they can pretty much put you away very quickly. And they didn't do it against Geelong. They didn't do it against Northern. I think that's the key for them winning the game, because they're going to get their entries, and Eastern are probably the strongest to stop them, but I still think they'll hit the scoreboard. And I just think across four quarters, they'll have it. And yeah, back-to-back premiers, if that call is right. And tipping, just to finalise it, I'm up by 2. So if Jonty gets both right, it's a draw, which would be quite fitting, because we've drawn in about the last 6 or 7 rounds. And then if I get one right, I've won the comp. So we'll find out next week. But that wraps it up. We'll be at both games on Saturday and Sunday. And hopefully we can talk to some players after the game, because there are some higher profile games afterwards. So we're hoping we can get the chance to talk to some players. So make sure you follow our socials to see all that content. And we'll be back next week to recap it all. And we're going to preview the AFL Under-17 Future Stars match on the MCG for grand final day. We're going to preview that and talk about the players who are in that. So make sure to tune in to next week's episode.
And we're also going to talk about the award winners as well. So that'll be a good talking point too.
100%. So look forward to that episode next week. Good luck to all the teams involved and all the players involved on the weekend. Been a great season to watch. So until then, thank you all for watching. We'll see you in the next episode.